we are beginning to recognize 2027 as the year of intelligence farming. Rural communities specifically are underprepared.
Well, and that's where the volunteer mayors, the city council, all of them would benefit from having tools and having visibility into, okay, what are they seeing that we are learning now?
AI is just really democratizing access. So a lot of these strategies that were only available to bigger communities or people with deeper pockets are now available to that, you know, volunteer mayor.
Welcome to this episode of the Building Texas Show. I am excited to be in Mason, Texas, with my friend Katie Milton Jordan, who has done so much in the ecosystem around the Texas Hill Country and now has a national footprint with simpleedo.ai and other tools and conversations that we're going to dive into today. So, Katie, thank you for joining me today.
Hey, happy to be here, Justin. I know that we've talked about different collaborations on your show for some time, and I'm glad that it's finally come to fruition. So thank you for having me.
Well, it's a great week to have you. We got to spend time together in Austin earlier this week at the Texas Venture Gala and Forum. C.S. Freeland puts that on as part of the Texas Venture Alliance, Texas Venture Fest, which we'll dive into. But all of that came to a culmination this week, and you were awarded Texas Venture Fest of the Year.
Yeah, it was a surprise. I'm definitely feeling humbled and honored, but certainly grateful to accept this award on behalf of the Hill Country communities that the Venture Fest and the Venture Alliance represent. So big week for sure.
Well, we've gotten to put on a couple of Venture Fests together, and I've been thrilled to bring my community and ecosystem into the Hill Country deeper to really be a part of it. And it was so much fun. I mean, the last one we had together, I think it was 150, 200 people. And we saw some incredible stories of founders out of Kerrville that have created momentum building technologies around energy and biofuels and other things that are real passions in the Hill Country. So it's exciting to see that come together. And I appreciate that we're talking about it as a region, because I think that's in the ecosystem building conversation, I've learned that the silos are really tough, and it's really great when we can work together.
Yes, I agree. I've noticed that as well. And I have really enjoyed collaborating with you. You brought a lot of really great folks to that event the second year that we hosted it, and was a wonderful collaboration. I really enjoyed meeting Miles Murray, for example. I know that he's a Tyvee graduate, and he's doing some amazing things. But yeah, the really fantastic collaborative project. And I feel like that was a very successful event that we hosted. And I too, am looking forward to expanding this to more of a regional collaborative project, because a lot of the things that I find in my community, when you just look at, you know, regular folks just living their life, especially in rural Texas communities, they aren't thinking about where, you know, the county line is, or, you know, who's receiving their property taxes, or, you know, who's executing on ecosystem infrastructure that supports, you know, startups, small businesses, Main Street businesses. We really view it, regular folks, I feel like, really view it as a regional lens. So I think that there's going to be a lot of power in empowering that regional focus instead of our traditional type of silos.
Well, and I guess working nationally now, you've really gone out, and I've heard you meeting with 30 EDOs at a time, or groups of 15 over in this state across the country. But do you see that as the more common approach, to where these leaders are coming together and sharing ideas, or are you finding it's one-off here, one-off there?
I'm not sure if it's the common approach, because when you take a look at how many of these projects get funded, there are, definitive lines that say, property taxes in this county go to support, this line item on the budget. So yeah. There is some, concrete definitions that, shouldn't be ignored. And I think that it can be helpful when you look at an innovative ecosystem with innovation.
Right.
How can we innovate for even greater impact in our communities and our regions? And instead of remaining divided by whatever, political, geographical, whatever lines divide us, there's power in unity, there's power in groups, there's power in numbers. And I think it can bring a lot of value to the individuals and businesses and communities that we're serving when we take a more regional approach. But yeah, on a national scale, you still see mixed results. There are some leaders that really enjoy that, collaborative approach and invite other creative, independent thinking individuals and leaders into their ecosystem, for lack of a better word, because they know that when we all work together, that the sum of everything is greater than it than its parts. So you still see some of it, and none of it is bad. I think that there are just certain times that we need to learn when we want to take a more surgical, precise approach, and when we want to expand that out to be more inclusive.
So as the founder and CEO of Simple EDO, tell me more about what is Simple EDO doing, and how are you helping these leaders around the country?
Yeah, so the innovation story of the work that I do with SimpleEDO.ai is a pretty humble beginnings in my work. With the Kerr Economic Development Corporation, I began studying AI and began partnering with AI to create some of the deliverables that I was responsible for delivering in economic development. And it was through that experience that I really had a light bulb moment, seeing how helpful AI can be in economic development organizations when individuals and leaders are taught how to use it safely, responsibly, that actually produces an ROI. That led me to launching SimpleEDO.ai. And so now I help economic development organizations and economic development leaders learn the tools to implement the systems to make an even greater impact in their community. One of the things that I like to share with the EDOs that I work with, because many of them are rural EDOs and they have a very small lean staff and a tight budget, which is, what I experienced in economic development as well. But the thing is that even with small teams, and when you infuse it with AI, the impact is even greater. So it's a very exciting time. To be sharing these tools and resources with economic development leaders.
Well, and to that point, you're almost like a coach on how to come in and how to successfully use AI, because I see a lot of people say, oh, we can just use AI for that, but not understanding the prompt engineering and the thoughtfulness that goes into effectively and efficiently using AI in a way that it's going to augment your staff instead of becoming a higher risk category for staff if they don't know how to properly use it, or they lean too heavily on it in some occasions.
Definitely. And we're certainly moving into a season where AI is not as new. It's starting to be more common. More and more people are using it. But what that also ushers in, especially for economic development organizations and municipalities, is taking a look at revenue and risk. And public municipalities don't necessarily call it revenue. Maybe they do, property tax revenue, I guess.
Right.
But managing revenue and risk are like the two things that I try to get these economic development leaders to take a look at, especially as we move deeper into the AI economy. Because when you have people who don't know how to use AI intentionally to generate an ROI or don't know how to use it responsibly to avoid risk, those things can be scary. So really, I help the clients that I work with optimize for revenue and risk. And there are certain things that we're just going to have to do differently going forward because we are living in the future of work.
Well, and that's an important term because the future of work is scary to a lot of people, and particularly in these municipal roles, if they've been in that role for 15, 20, 25 years. This rapid pace of change has hit them hard, particularly in the rural setting where the speed of life wasn't as quick as it can be. But now it seems that it's fast everywhere.
Yeah. And typically you'll see municipalities will watch the private markets, you know, privately held companies, see how they respond to these changes. So municipalities are typically late adopters, and they want to see that proof of concept, and they want to see that ROI roll out in the private sector first, and then they'll be like, okay, now we're going to adopt what those guys did. And that's not a bad approach, especially when you have to report back to your citizens, who essentially are, you know, the people that hold you responsible. Although I do think that at some point, we're going to start to see the citizens saying, you know, things like, okay, our taxes could be lower if you use these tools. Right. And I think that as citizens become more AI fluent and more comfortable using AI responsibly, we're going to see them asking our public officials to be held accountable to these types of ROI at a less expensive price point.
Well, as we get there, when we talk about ROI in this setting, what are we looking at? Because I don't believe it can just be economic development wins. I think there's also business retention factors. And then I'm starting to pick up a theme around the state around stakeholder knowledge. Just how do you get feedback from the citizens and how can technology help capture that feedback in a usable way? Because surveys aren't as common as they once were. And I think it's harder to get that adoption. But with certain tools, you can go out and say, what are people looking for in my area? And understand those keywords and understand other back office tools that exist to really see that full return that I think you're talking about.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I'm part of a consortium of AI transformation experts. There's probably over 120 of us worldwide that all specialize in different industries and niches and so on and so forth. But we've come together to kind of, you know, find that jagged edge of what's possible with AI. Anyways, it's through this consortium that we are beginning to recognize 2027 as the year of intelligence farming, if you will, or context mining. And if you take a look at, you know, any organization, whether it's, you know, public or private, they have like, let's just use a municipal example for this example, so it can be a little bit more specific. But if you take a look at a municipality, they probably have tons of, you know, data and documentation from, you know, the town hall that they had last year or last month, or, you know, these 30-day board meeting, you know, cadences. They've got tons of information. And once simple way that they can leverage AI for ROI in that situation is if they were to farm all of that intelligence in that context and partner with AI to synthesize it and analyze it, they pretty much have all the answers that they would ever be looking for. But one of the challenges that we see inside of organizations is that there are so many individuals and departments that are operating from what I'll call tribal knowledge. You know, like Sue knows how to do this you know, invoicing role, and Sue knows that customer A prefers the invoice to be attached to the email instead of sent some other method, you know, and that's tribal knowledge and it's not written down anywhere. But even if you went to a municipality and just gathered all of the context that they've kept on public record for how many years, and you synthesize that, it can give a signal to the current leadership or the current administration saying, okay, take a look at this signal. You know, historically, this is what your constituents have like asked for or reported or, you know, whatnot. And, you know, one could logically assume looking to the future, you might consider one of these paths. So I think that there's like tons of ways that can be helpful. And a lot of the leaders that I talk to, I recognize that they just don't know what they don't know. Like they don't yet know what's possible.
I have to believe that site selectors are using tools like that, though, because it is public record. If you have the tools to go pick it up, and site selectors would, they know those communities really well before they show up. And there has to be an advantage or at least a level playing field in those conversations. And my particular concern would be rural America. And I think that's what we're seeing, these data centers pop up everywhere because they've done their research on where is it going to be a fit for their metrics. It might not be a fit for community metrics, but they selected those sites on purpose. And I wonder how prepared rural communities are to understand why the site was selected and why that's a fit and where to leverage those decisions.
I would suggest that their rural communities specifically are underprepared in this specific example, you know, because if you just take a look at the resources that an average site selector has, you know, they've just got more tools, resources, you know, funding, everything at their fingertips compared to a civic leader, for example, in rural America. And I definitely have been, you know, we could surface plenty of stories about how site selectors have, you know, found an ROI in rural America that met their metrics that maybe wasn't a fit for the community metrics.
Well, and that's where the volunteer mayors, the city council, all of them would benefit from having tools and having visibility into, okay, what are they seeing that we are learning now? And that's why I appreciate the work that you do and how you're preparing people to make that transition into the future of work. And it's hard for you and I to have made the transition into this technology. So I applaud everyone that's going through that.
I agree, definitely. And even yesterday at the networking lunch in the Venture Forum, there was another gentleman that was sharing about how AI is just really democratizing access for, you know, startups, entrepreneurs, rural founders. This also applies to rural communities that have limited resources, because now there are certain things that would have been impossible to do without AI at maximum, and at minimum were cost prohibitive. So a lot of these strategies that were only available to bigger communities or people with deeper pockets are now available to that, you know, volunteer mayor who, you know, has a volunteer council person, you know, like, It's what's possible now is really AI is really democratizing this access to people who didn't historically have access to it.
How can people find more about you, the work that you're doing, the tools that you're offering?
Yeah, definitely. Well, folks can reach out to me at simpleedo.ai. That's where you can find my economic development work. And if you are interested in the work that I'm doing specifically in the Hill Country, I invite folks to check out thetownie.ai. And that is the channel that we will be hosting this year's Venture Fest for the Hill Country on October 1st.
And thank you for bringing back the Hill Country Venture Fest. It's going to be a great event this year. If people are interested in that, thetownie.ai. And you're always looking for sponsors, speakers, volunteers. because that is an event that you put on in sweat. And I want to say thank you for doing that.
Yes, it's a passion project. I really enjoy it. And it is definitely a lot of blood, sweat, and tears invested into that project because I really believe in our rural entrepreneurs and our small business owners. So if there are speakers, volunteers, funders, founders, and you want to, you know, check out this year's Hill Country Venture Fest, send an email to hey@thetownie.ai. We would love to have your contribution.
And then finally, I'll ask, and we'll plug C.S. Freeland again for the great work she did with the Texas Venture Gala and Forum, but what was your biggest takeaway from this week in Austin and what you saw there?
Man, there were a lot of highlights the last couple days. One of the things that really impressed me the most was that CS has an incredible talent for curating remarkable leaders. I was really impressed not only with the caliber of leaders that she brought to this event, but I was really impressed with how authentic these leaders were, because I know that there's a lot of times that you can, you know, show up to a conference or a summit or, you know, something, and there's great leaders there who are, you know, done amazing things, but they're not authentic. They don't feel approachable. But I just really loved the warmth of this event, the remarkable leaders that were there, and how approachable everybody was. And during networking, I feel like everybody was like, how can I help you? How can I, you know, what can I, how can I help you do this thing? So there really was an abundance mentality, a collaborative spirit with some real high caliber leaders.
Couldn't agree more. Well, Katie, it's been a pleasure to visit with you today. Thank you for taking time. And we'll encourage everybody to get out and visit Mason, Texas this summer as you're touring the Hill Country. It's a great place to stop and visit.
It is. Come on out to Mason.
Thank you so much. Thank you for enjoying this episode of the Building Texas Show. We release a new episode every week, and you can find us across all social platforms. Please like and subscribe on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Thank you to our sponsor, Chisos Boots, and their damn comfortable cowboy boots.